Good evening. Obviously, the person I have tonight is actually Abraham. I was assigned Genesis chapter 22. Like what I heard before, sometimes we'll say we'll get there. I think we need to know a little bit about the background. But when you think about Abraham, what's one of the first things that comes to mind? Anyone? When you think about Abraham, what do you picture? He was going right where I wanted to. He said the promises, the three promises, as we'll talk about, which I think is very important to know that before we get to Genesis chapter 22. But right here, I think about this. How would you one day like to be called, or how about now, be called the friend of God? That's Abraham. He was considered the friend of God. And in James chapter 1, James chapter 2, verse 23, it says, and the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. Now, when we look at Abraham's life, we know Abraham wasn't perfect, right? His faith at times was a little bit shaky. I would say that he has a growing faith, but what I have a title for this lesson before we get to Genesis 22 is maybe the testing of a lifetime. The testing of a lifetime. And so when we look at Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, and actually we're going to start in Acts, if you will, turn over to Acts chapter 7 real quick. You can always say Abraham's life didn't show a complete 100% faith all the time. And I'm going to show you that a couple of different ways. First off, does anybody know how many times God actually called him to leave the land to go to a land that he's going to show him? That's a good question, huh? It was actually twice. One time he waited, I guess, for his dad to pass away and die. Then he was asked to go again. But let's look at Acts chapter 7. We have Stephen, who's the first Christian martyr that's recorded. And verse 2, it says, and he said, and he was a Stephen, brethren and fathers, listen, the God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Haran. And he said to him, get out of your country and from your relatives and come to a land that I will show you. And then here you go. Then he came out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran. Then it says, and from there, when his father was dead, he moved him to his land in which he now dwell. If you turn over to Genesis chapter 12, which we read a little bit earlier, if you go back to that with me, that's actually the second time, believe it or not, that God actually asked him to get up and move. And obviously we know in the previous chapter, his father, Terah, did pass away. In verse 1, it says, now the Lord said to Abraham, get out of your country once again. But real quick, when he tells him about the promises that he's going to have for him, he's going to show him this land and that he's going to be a blessing to others. How old was Abram at this time? Look at verse 4. He was how old? 75 years old. Now, just keep that in mind as we go through this. And so when he gets to Genesis chapter 22, he's going to be much older than 75 years old. But it's going to take him a while to actually get there when we look at this. When we look at him being called twice, I'd say he'd also had a couple of stumbles on the way. And one stumbles in Genesis chapter 12, which we'll briefly go over there. We'll look at the verses 10 through 20 once again. And we also look in Genesis chapter 20. It seems like Abraham completely understood when God said, go to a place that I'll show you. He was willing to go. He knew God was going to take care of him. He didn't care where the destination was going to go, but he was going to go. But there was something he still was not 100% sure about. And that's his life. His life. So if you turn over to Genesis chapter 12, Genesis chapter 12, verse 10, it says, now there is a famine in the land. So he goes to Egypt. Look at verse 11. And it came to pass when he was close to entering Egypt that he said to Sarai, his wife, indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore, it will happen when the Egyptians see you that they will say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will let you live. Now, didn't God just tell him earlier that you're going to have a seed promise? You're going to have some descendants? But right now, Abram, does he have any kids yet? So he's fearful that he's going to die at this point. Verse 6 or 13, please say you are my sister, that I may be well with you for your sake, that I might live because of you. And so, of course, in this rest of the story here, he goes into Egypt. The princess of Pharaoh commends her to, Pharaoh. And, of course, she goes for her sake. And the Lord actually plagued him for what actually happened. Not Abram, but plagued Pharaoh's household. In verse 13, "Why did you say she is my sister?" Pharaoh asked, and he says, I might have taken her as my wife. Therefore, here is your wife. Take her and go away." And so he goes away. So this is the first time that he does that. But this is not the last time. Get over to Genesis chapter 20. And right here you kind of think, well, he was plagued. He wasn't plagued by Abram. He was plagued by God because of what was happening. Abram's starting to see some things that God's providing for him. He's having a safety. But when we look at Genesis chapter 20, we still have a little bit of a problem. We get to Abimelech. Let's skip down to verse 2. "Now Abraham said to Sarah, his wife, 'She is my sister.' And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah." We continue to read there. It says God came to Abimelech in a dream and asked him, "Why did you take this man's wife?" And he's like, "I did not know. If I would have known this, I wouldn't have done this." Let's skip down to verse 7. Verse 7, God says, "Now therefore restore this man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, you and all of yours." Skip down to verse 11. "And Abram said," this is the reason why, I kind of skipped ahead of myself, in 8, 9, and 10, Abimelech approaches him and says, "Hey, why did you do this to me?" And here's his answer, verse 11. "And Abraham said, 'Because I thought surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on account of my wife.'" And of course, once again, I wouldn't say he has a complete 100% faith or trust in God all the way, because he still haven't seen that promise come. But, you know, that's not bad, and we'll talk about this. You know, God has patience with us. We can get back up, keep on going. I think about a young kid learning to ride a bike. You ever remember first riding your bike? You fall down, you give up? No, you don't give up. You get back up, you start running again. And we'll see when we get to Genesis 22 and we have that ultimate test. This didn't disqualify Abram. God kept on, was faithful to him because God made the promise. And that's one thing that we need to remember. But let's continue to read in verse 17. It says, "So Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and his female servants." And this is interesting to me because I'm not sure exactly how long he was here at this point here. But here it says, "Then they bore children, for the Lord had closed up all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife." Now you think about that, the wombs being opened up so they can have kids. Shouldn't Abraham might start thinking about this a little bit more? We'll see. But not only he had a couple of stumbles, he also has a problem of waiting sometimes. Sometimes we get impatient. "All right, God, so you are going to give a descendant, but I'm going to help you out a little bit, you know, so we can get this going. You approached me at 75, haven't had my kid yet, but let's go ahead and skip back to Genesis 15. Genesis 15. We're going to look at verses 1 through 6, which is already read once. But in verse 1, "After these things, the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Abraham. I am your shield. I'm your protector, your exceedingly great reward.' But Abram said," and here we go, "'Lord, what will you give me, seeing I go childless? And the heir of my house is Eleazar of Damascus.'" And so back then, it wasn't uncommon for individuals or couples, who didn't have children to actually have a trusted servant be their heir, to inherit everything. So, hey, I know you said you're going to bless me. We're going to have that seed promise. But, hey, maybe we can just use my servant here. Now, let's see what God says in verse 4. "Now, behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, 'This one should not be your heir, but one coming from your own body shall be your heir.' Then he brought him outside and said, 'Look now towards heaven and count the stars, if you're able to number them.' And then verse 6, 'And he believed in the Lord, and he counted to him for righteousness.'" So he understands that, hey, I am going to have a child, but when and how? My wife hasn't had a child in a while, then we're going to get a little bit of help God along a little bit more. And so let's go ahead and skip over to chapter 16. And this was read also for us. "Now Sarai," verse 1, "Abram's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar." All right, so God said, "Abram, you're going to have a descendant coming from you." He didn't say anything from me. All right, so let me help you out. Here, let's take the maidservant. And sometimes when I always looked at this, I wondered why in the world did Abram do this in the first place. And sometimes when I look at this a little bit more, and I look at the context before when God just said, "Hey, it's going to come from you," maybe I could see why Abram wasn't completely trusting in God, and he went with wife's plan. And we saw who's the individual that's born because of this. Do y'all remember? Name Ishmael. So the first son that was born of Abram is actually Ishmael, who is not the promised son. So keep that in mind. So we actually have that story there. So we have that waiting problem that he's actually struggling with a little bit. Skip over to verse or chapter 17. Chapter 17. Abram is still waiting on God. He's 99 years old. He still hasn't had that. He has his child now. At least he thinks he does. He thinks he does. In verse 1, when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "Hey, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me and be blameless, and I will make a covenant between me and you, and I will multiply you exceedingly." Then Abraham fell on his face, and God talked with him, saying, "As for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be a father of many nations. No longer shall your name be called Abram." So he changes his name to Abraham. And let me see where I'm going to go to. Skip down to verse 10. It says, "This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you." And I think this is something that's going to show some faith in God, especially if you're a man and you think about this. This is, "Every male child among you shall be circumcised." And we'll think about how old Abraham is when he falls through with that, because God told him to do it. So keep that in mind. Skip down to verse 15. "Then God said to Abraham, 'As for Sarah, your wife, you should not call her name Sarah, but Sarah shall be her name.'" And here's where we got to talk about again. "And I'll bless her, and also I'll give you a son by" who? Not your maidservant, but by your wife, Sarah. "Then I will bless her, and she will be the mother of nations. Kings of people shall come from her." In verse 17, "Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, 'Shall a child be born of a man who's 100 years old?'" So he's 99, but he's saying, "I'll be 100 when that's going to happen. "And shall Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child?" And Abraham said to God, "Oh, let me help you out. Let's use Ishmael." And of course, God does not want to do that. In verse 21, it says, "But my covenant I will establish with" who? Isaac. Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear at about this set time next year. So if you think about this, he's been waiting about 24 years, right? Just waiting, waiting, trying to help God out. Not there yet. And I think it's important that we understand that before we get to Genesis chapter 22 to figure out the importance of this. I know kids, we hear this story all the time of Genesis chapter 22 of Abraham delivering up his son Isaac on the altar. And you can think about that, kids. How difficult could that be for your dad to do something like that? And for us as adults, when we get older and we look at this, we can see the providence of God throughout this whole thing. And I'm kind of going kind of fast, hopefully not too fast. We're doing pretty good on this one. Oh, now I skipped one thing before I got there. I wanted to go to chapter 21 before I get to 22. After we talked about the waiting, we finally have the arrival in Genesis chapter 21. God fulfills his promise. Isaac is actually born. Abraham learns that God's clock is always accurate, even when it seems slow to us. You think about how many times you waited on something. And we'll talk about that a little bit later when the devo part. I'll try to make application of things that we can learn from this lesson. But in 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 8 through 9, it says, "But beloved, do not forget this one thing, that with the Lord one day is 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is one day. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some count slackness, but is long-suffering towards us." Understand the context when we look in 2 Peter. It's talking about there will be scorners that are talking about, hey, where's the Lord's return? Where's the promise? When is he coming back? Talking about the day of judgment. But one thing right here, a day is like 1,000 years. It's not really that, but it's a, hey, when God says something, and he's made a promise, he's going to fulfill it on his terms, all right, on his time. In Isaiah chapter 55, verse 8 and 9, here's one thing that Abraham could learn, and we can too. It says, "For my thoughts," and this is Lord, "are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways." Let me help you out, God. Let's use this kid. Let's use this one instead, says the Lord. "For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." So kind of keep that in mind. So we said before, as we get through and we look at the beginning of kind of Abraham's life, and he's waiting on that promise, that seed promise. He knows now that seed promise is going to come through him, come through to his wife, and he finally has it. This is like his ultimate treasure, his ultimate gift. "I waited 25 years for this. I don't want to give this up." Think about in your life, do you have something that you consider an ultimate treasure, an ultimate gift? And we'll come back and we'll talk about the importance of what you should do with that gift and where we should place that when we keep God in mind. All right. So let's look at Genesis chapter 22. We'll go there. And I have a little bit of an outline for it. Do I have any volunteers? Would anybody like to read a little bit? If I can get, let's see, where's Nate? Oh, he's in the back. Dietrich, in a second, you mind reading verses 1 through 3 for us of Genesis chapter 22? But not yet. When we look at verses 1 through 3, we're going to call this the command and prompt response. The command and prompt response. If you go ahead. Yes, sir. Thank you so much. All right, so in verse 1, we have the test. Here we have God tested Abraham. Kind of can be confusing if you look in the King James versions, because instead of using the word test, what does it use? Does anybody have that? Tempt, right? That can be very, very, very misleading. When you think of the word that's actually used here, it's called nasah. And when we think about testing, God tested Abraham, but God tests to purify and to prove. You think about me as a school teacher, when I give out tests to kids, it's not to trick them, it's not to tempt them, but it's to see what they actually know, to see if they're able to apply or do what they're supposed to do. Kind of keep that in mind. When we look at the word nasah, it does mean this. It means to test, try, prove. It does mean tempt, but not in this section. And it means to put to the proof or test. And the reason why I say we don't mean this in this section, how many of y'all are familiar with what we find in James chapter 1? If y'all will, hold your spot here in Genesis chapter 22, but go over to James chapter 1 real quick. James chapter 1. In James chapter 1, it says, blessed is the man who endures temptation. You said, why do I take you here? Because it says temptation. But it says, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. But here we go, verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt who? Himself. He does not tempt anyone. So we know when we go back to Genesis chapter 22, verse 1, we're not talking about God tempting someone. We're talking about testing. We're talking about proving. And so you're familiar with the story. We know that Abraham is going to prove and pass the test, but if it's the first time, you wouldn't know that. Let's go ahead and go back to our text. In verse 2, we have what we call the request. When you look at the request here, think about, you remember I told you that Abraham's son, Isaac, it's like his ultimate treasure at this time. He waited 25 years on it. Look at the emotions that's attached to verse 2. First off, God says, take now whose son? Not somebody else's son. Take your son that you waited 25 or so years. It's longer than that now. We can talk about that a little bit later, but we're not really worried about how old they are, but we'll get there. I might mention that in a second. But not only he says, take your son, but he also says, take your only son, Isaac. And the reason why he calls that your only son, that's the promised son. That's the son of promise. That's the one that talks about the blessings and the curses. That's the one where the Messiah is actually going to come through eventually. So we have that. But then the third thing we see, whom you what? Whom you love. So you got these three things. But I want you to take him and I want you to offer him up as a burnt offering. Man, let me think about this. I was fearful at one point. I told the Pharaoh and I told Abimelech, but my wife was my sister, which is a half-truth, but it's still a lie, right? Maybe I should ponder this just a little bit. But if you look at verse 3, does he ponder anything? We have what we call immediate obedience, just like that. Abraham rises early in the morning. No arguing, no lingering, no stalling. He saddles the donkey, gathers the wood, and he's on his way. From a human perspective, God's commands seem to contradict his promise already. If this is the first time you're reading through the Bible, you're like, hey, this doesn't make sense. Why would God actually do this when he said this is going to be the promised son? He's supposed to have descendants and make a many nations or a great nation out of him. How's that possible? But when Abraham rose early that next morning to begin his journey, he demonstrated that genuine faith trusts God's character even when God's plans are unclear. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. Abraham did not have all the answers, but he knew the one who did. And he was following the one who did, who was God. His obedience revealed a faith that trusted God's character even when God's plan was not fully understood. And so we're going to look at verses 4-8, which is the journey of silent trust. And Mike, do you mind reading verses 4-8 for us?
Then on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place called Luz. Abraham said to him, "Run again. Stay here with the donkey, the lad, and the eye. Go yonder and worship, and you will come back." Abraham took the wood and the burnt offering and laid it on the eye of his son. He took the fire in his hand, the knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac
Thank you. All right, so in verse 4, we can call that the 3 days. There's a 3-day journey. And in Abraham's mind, his son Isaac is already dead. He's going to go through with it. There's no debating in his mind. He's not debating. He's not trying to figure out what's going to happen. He's already dead, that 3-day journey. The next verse, verse 5, we have a statement of absolute faith. The reason I say absolute faith right here, he tells his young men, stay here with the donkey, the lad. When we use that word lad, lad can mean lots of things. Some people ask, how old is Isaac here? They say he could be a teenager. They say he could be a young man, 20s. Obviously, he's not too young because he has to carry the wood, right? And we'll look at that in a little bit. And he's also old enough to realize, hey, what's going on here, right? Something's missing because of what you have taught me before, Dad. I know we've done sacrifices before, but what's going to happen here? But right here, here's where we have that statement of absolute faith. It says, the lad and I will go yonder and worship. Who's going to come back? We. Didn't I already say that he already decided that he was going to go ahead and put his son on the altar? But here he says, we will come back. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that when you get to Hebrews in just a second. And the hard question is asked by his son. Isaac carries the wood. And one thing, Ron made me think about this other day. Obviously, Isaac knows what's going on, and the reason why, I didn't even think about go back to this, but if you look at Genesis 18:19 real quick. And the reason why I bring this up, obviously Abraham had to be teaching his children some things, right? And one thing that I reminded when Ryan mentioned this the other day, Genesis 18, verse 19, this is what the Lord said about Abraham. For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they will keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice. The Lord may bring Abraham what he has spoken to him. So my point is right there, I'm pretty sure we can assume he was learning from his dad. His dad actually taught him what was going to happen. But of course, that hard question, where's the sacrifice? In verse 8, we have the prophetic answer. You remember Abraham being a prophet? Here he says, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. And so Abraham responds with confidence, and they continue to go on. And we look at verses 9-14, which I'll read this time. This we can call the climax on Moriah. Verse 9, it says, then they came to a place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order, and he bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. A little side story. Isaac, he's at least 100 years younger than his dad. I'm pretty sure he's faster than his dad. He might be a little bit stronger. He should be able to run. I probably would. I would go kicking and screaming. But his dad just ties him up. Now, you think about this. This makes me think of a side point. I used to say this in prayer. You know, God didn't make us robots, right? He gave us freedom of choice. You have freedom to choose what you want to do. Think about how submissive Isaac was to this will. He humbled himself. He was going through it. Think about that for us in our lives. When you read something that God commanded us to do, it might be difficult, not because you don't understand it, but might because, hey, I don't want to do that. That's kind of hard. Or you just want to be prideful and go your way. Submit. And we see that Isaac actually does that. And I lost my spot. What verse I was on? All right, so verse 8. And Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. Verse 10, excuse me. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And here we go. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, here I am. And he said, do not lay your hand on your lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God. Go back to real quick before we read that. Verse 1, God did what to Abraham? He tested him. Did he pass? The answer is right here. I know that you actually fear him. You're going to have respect, reverence. You're going to be obedient to him, follow his ways. And so we have that there. So the angel of the Lord, verse 11, called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, here I am. And he said, do not lay your hand on the lad, do anything. For now I know you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son from him. Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. God provided what Abraham needed at that exact moment. And we're going to talk about some things that Abraham had to do in order to actually get there. Verse 14, and Abraham called the name of the place, the Lord will provide, as it said to this day, in the mount, the Lord, it shall be provided. Now the word, the Lord will provide, is an interesting word. It's Jehovah Jireh. And we actually had that at VBS, I guess, a while back or something like that. Jehovah, we're familiar with, right? The existing one, the eternal one, the one that has no beginning or end. It's the name that they use for God. Jireh is very interesting, that second part. There's a lot of information on it, and I can't really give you everything. But that word means to, and this is saying this about God, keep this in mind, to see, look at, inspect, perceive, consider. If God's going to be someone that's going to be providing, isn't he looking to see what you actually need? Matthew chapter 6, verses 31 through 32, or 33, excuse me. Think about that. So not only that, we also have in that word a meaning to regard, look after, see after, learn about. I like that, learn about. Observe, watch, look upon, look out, find out. Give attention to, discern, and distinguish. This is the word that was used for our God. Do you think your God watches out for you? Yes. And so I think that's a beautiful thing when he says that God will provide. And we actually have that right there. In verses 15 through 19, I'm doing pretty decent on time. Verses 15 through 19, we have the covenant is confirmed. And in verse 15, the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your only son. Blessings I will bless you, and multiply, and I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore, and your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. And your seed, all the nations of the earth, shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. So once again, God confirms what he's going to do for him. Now, when we think about that command to go and offer up Isaac, what was Abraham thinking? And the New Testament tells us, real quick, turn over to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11. We're going to look at verse 17 through 19. If you look at verse 18 from what we already had earlier, that's God's promise, of whom it said, and Isaac, your seed shall be called. That's the promise. Skip down the verse, or skip back up to verse 17. Here's actually the command. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and who had received the promises, offered up his only begotten son. Now let's look at verse 19. Why was he willing to do this? Abraham, you know, you hear some people talk about faith is just a leap in the dark. Faith is not a leap in the dark. Abraham knew exactly what God's going to do. If you told me that I finally have Isaac, and you're telling me I want to have many descendants from this son, what's going to happen if I kill him? There has to be only one answer. There's only one answer. He's not just going la-di-da-di, I'm just going to do this. There has to be one answer. In verse 19, concluding that God was able to raise him up, even from the dead, from which he also, remember he was 100 years old himself when he had him, received him in a figurative sense. All right. I'm going to sit down for a second and we'll have our song and I'll go over a couple of lessons that we can learn from this and we'll have the invitation.